friends helped me to come here. You know one of my friends. His name is called Sun Bear. And another who I do not think has come here. And his name is Crazy Horse. A long time ago, some spirits came down from the sky and speak to some of my people. I think this was a long time ago. I am not sure whether you would call it that. But it was the habit of the spirits to come and visit our people from time to time and lay a path that would guide us in our destiny. We called these ones the Great White Brothers. They were not like the white men and women that came to this land. They were different than that. And they came from a different place than where our people came from. They were not born of this land like we were born of this land. They said that in our origins we have all come from the same place. But these ones which came to visit our people came to speak with me. And they told me they had spoken with my great, great, great grandfather and many grandfathers before that. They said it was their way to communicate through family reason, through family lines, for reasons that I would not understand. And they told our people, my great, great, great grandfather, that the white brothers, not them, but the white people from across the sea would come, and that we had to mix our knowledge, because if we did not mix our knowledge, then neither of our people would survive, not the native people or the white brothers which would come here. They said the white brothers which would come here would have big heads, and that we had big hearts. And if they did not carry our big heart, there would be murder and death. And if we did not carry their big heads, there our people would die. And so we had to mix and share our knowledge. They said that there were great plans for this land, that there were ultimately great lands, great plans for all the peoples here of the earth, that if there was not a successful understanding, then the peoples of all the lands all over the earth would one day die, and that they were helping us to live. They said that the day would come when they would make themselves known to all the peoples all over the earth. But they said they have tried to do this many times before, and with each time it led to the end of the civilization of those people, because the people were not ready. It brought knowledge and misunderstanding. Advancement came with too quick change and destruction. Those who gained power and knowledge may have been too primitive and sought to dominate in ways they ought not other peoples and many things, and that not all the peoples who would come from the sky had the same intention. And so that we had a long road ahead. They said that many had great faith, and that they were sent here by the Great One who lived in the center of things, and that also that the same Great One who lived in the center of things we all carried in here. And so this, they also told us that if we did not have a successful integration of all of the peoples, that there would be several chances. They said that nearly all of our people, the native people, would die, and they described how they all would die if it was not successful. And that those who came to this land, who were the newcomers and their descendants, we would then work from the heaven worlds above this dimension in some ways much the way they did, but a little different, to help the newcomers to this land negotiate the ways of this land. For this land has a spirit, and our people, the original people here, know this land and its ways, for we have been here for thousands of years. And so we would help them to understand, the newcomers to this land, from the spirit world. And so all the people who need to function better in the physical plane, whose heads are too big, but their hearts have forgotten their ancestors, and they have little connection to their ancestors, and they do not know their way of their ancestors, and they do not know the ways of this land either. These are like lost people. who wander, who cannot find their purpose for living in this world, because they are cut from their ancestors and not knowledgeable of this land. And so, we come to you, who are the descendants of those ones from the spirit world, and each one of you has a spirit in you, like me, who walks with you. Some of you are not in touch with that, and others of you are. My name is Red Cloud, and I come to you, Larry, who I have known. I have known you in two ways, which I will not discuss now. There are many things which the people here do not know, and therefore much is misunderstood. There are those people who seek to study the ways of the ancients of many cultures, and perhaps study the ways and the highest teachings of their family's ancestors. And there are those that study the ways of the peoples of this land. But if you do not know these things, which are the history of this earth, and who you are from, and where you are from, it is very hard to understand where you are going. If you are using the basis of your understanding that is formed by a picture which does not go very deep, a picture provided by your people, which are a smart people, but this culture is a new people, a very new people. You must go into the land, into the water, into the earth. So the spirits of these things can speak with you. Because if you do these things, it will speak with you. And you will find the voices of your ancestors in those spirits. And your voices of those spirits and your ancestors, we will help you on your way. Every old people of every nation has a connection culturally in the culture with the ancestors across the grave. Yet here, in this culture, these things are frightening. That is how ignorant as a people, as a culture, this culture is, and much must be learned. the medicine that is available by being in the earth, with the earth, is impossible to convey to you in the words unless you have been with the earth and it speaks to you here, where you breathe and where you feel. Where you begin to not only believe you are a part of this, but see and feel how you are a part of this and how you are connected to everything and maybe also to other people as well. Sometimes when you are confused, to go into the land, out of the home and into the land, like in a backyard or out to the sea or away from people. It does not matter which. And begin to open your senses. Begin to smell and breathe, and let your smell go as far as it can go and as rich as you can take it in. And listen to the sounds of the wind and the animals and the sounds they make. Not just the calls of the birds, but the movement through the grass of the lizards, listen, and the rustle of leaf, and the movement of the wind on your skin, and the heat of the sun, and the dripping of your sweat upon your flesh, and your connectedness with all of this. Do not fight it when it rains upon you, trying to hide and dodge the water. Let it fall upon you. You will dry off later. Feel it when your hands get dirty from the soil. Don't shake it off like it is bad right away, but feel it on your body and let yourself feel the mother of whose very essence you are made. This is good medicine. Sometimes when you are this way, and you extend your senses outward, and you get connected, you get a message. This is not the message which goes into the big head which the people of this land pride themselves on. But this is a message that speaks to a different part of your being. Where the only thing you can say when you feel this message is good medicine. And then go back into your home and see if your awareness has not shifted. You will think of someone and they will call you on the phone. You will have an idea and something to do with that happens later on. It is not that you are making these things happen, but you have in fact become one to a greater extent beyond the narrow confine of your own psyche and psychology, which is you have no name for this in your language. Maybe the closest word is ego, something beyond your ego has reached outward into a greater awareness that is sensual and conscious. What does a dog do when it hears so far and smells so rich? What is in a dog's mind? Or a dolphin's awareness, who can hear your pulse rate change, your heart beat, the blood in your veins, the respiratory rate, and all of these things which establish for any who are aware your state of mind, your state of being, which you do not know between each other very often. And one moment in the presence of a dolphin in the water, and there are no secrets. If you had that kind of awareness, what would you do with it? If an entire culture had this kind of awareness, what directions would then be important? It is vital to understand that when the Spirit speaks to you, it may be in another language than English. It may be another language than intellectual. It may be to your core, to your essential nature. If you want to hear the word of Spirit, you must have the medicine of the earth. If you listen to these things, your spirit will get calm and you will know much. My name is called Red Cloud. The white brothers, not the great white brothers, but the white brothers did not like me very much. Because I was what they call Hayoke. You know this word? I don't think there is exact translation in your language. It means the closest description in your language is something like crazy. But in my language, it is more like trickster. It is one who does something which there is no word for exactly in your culture either. We call it coup, count you like a counting coup. You hear this word? You heard that word, coup? Well, in my people, when we count coup, it means when somebody disrespects you and you give them a lesson when the time is right that helps them understand a teaching to bring them further. Now, the closest you have in your language is revenge, but that is not the same as count coup. There is no single word for that in your nation, and it must be done without hate, and it must truly teach, not hurt. Of course, many is only a resistance to a lesson, and these things are deep in our culture and go way back. Lessons which in your nation, in your people's psychology, would not sit well. So, he's one who is who teaches lessons in a trickster manner. That is why Crazy Horse was my good friend. That is why Sun Bear is my good friend. So I come to you. I will not be a trickster for you. I have known you. I already was a trickster for you a while back. So that's all I must say. I will go. Goodbye. You will remember my name. He's Red Cloud. Okay? You will find me in your books, but you do not believe the whole story unless you hear the words of the native people about Red Cloud. But you will find some things, I'm sure, in your books which are true. Since I haven't read them, I would not know exactly, but I'm sure I am there, somewhere. You will not have to go too far. Look somewhere within the period when the history of this nation had been, since it had been established as United States. Goodbye. Hello, my friends. I am very happy to be able to come here. My name is Nocturne Action. Quite difficult for My mannerism is quite intentional. There is no unconscious. It does not exist, but rather a human being finds places within their own mind which serve some survival-oriented aspect of life, business. And in order to adopt the survival orientation successfully, what is unnecessary in the perception of that person for survival is then closed out deliberately and creates a consciousness, a conscious mind that is limited to the extent of its choices to be aware. This awareness then becomes habituated and patterned into a form-directed idea which the person then identifies with as self and relates to everything that is in the reality of the projection of their own ego. When change is sought, it is often difficult because in order to change, the individual calls upon the limited sense of identity which they have been cultivated into a patterned thought system and becomes unable to effect any successful change. It is therefore important that a being who seeks to initiate change go past this into a conscious area of mind where I believe all intelligence is referenced, and so it is not personal to anyone. Most people do not tap the superconscious wisdom because it is unfamiliar and causes the reality to which they experience to be reflected back to them in some way that they cannot easily understand, and their experience of life becomes uncomfortable and even incomprehensible. presume, and subsequently we will adopt the comfortable habits, patterns. Again, if a guide not king of the spirit, but another person will enter this zen into their reality as they understand their reality, and that guide has experienced a greater reality, the one which enters their reality and adopts some of the same beliefs or appears to identify with that being, can then create a doorway through being very imaginative out of the limited identity into a more expansive space where other possibilities become available, and create a context of safety within that new reality. There are many ways in which this can be done. One of them, I'm doing right now. It is important, I will finally say, even necessary for any human being wishing to make a contact with the super conscious intelligence, which you might otherwise call the unconscious. But there is nothing unconscious about it. Then it is necessary to expose yourself from time to time to that which is alien to your comprehension, and that which you may even disagree with. For it will certainly interrupt habit, patterns, and create the spontaneous occurrence of the superconscious awareness. I have it for you. I am one who knows you. I know you to see. I knew a family member of yours, family member who you do not even know. A family member is no longer alive, but I am glad you asked him fear, because this look which lies ahead of you, the eyes did not come to be a help for that look. To you, I am just greeting you. To go now, this makes me very tired. Goodbye. Morton Erickson. Can you remember? Thank you. is true that there is a great work to be done. But you did not come here to do this work. You must, in fact, participate in it. But you did not come here to do this work. If you didn't do this work, the work would still be done. The work which needs to be done here in this world. Recognizing what this work is and becoming a part of it, you can know yourself and be at one with all that love is. Life here is a gift. There are many who seek the next dimension because they suffer and toil in this one. Must be prepared to, in fact, toil, but you did not come here to suffer. One must be prepared to toil, if necessary, for at times what you value requires it. And that is why it is essential to understand what it is that you value. For if it requires toil and you value it, the toil which you do towards it will bring you joy and growth. To understand what you value is a powerful responsibility. For once you understand what you value, you must be true to it. Or live a lie. And to live a lie when you know the truth, that is suffering. That is why you need not suffer. For you can only suffer to live a lie. If you are suffering, you are lying. as challenging or difficult towards what you value may cause pain. But the truth which it awakens in you brings freedom, power, and light. And this is not suffering. This is joy. Ordinary pain and pleasure and the seeking of ordinary pleasure is good. It is good until you learn and inevitably one does learn until you learn that there is something more, that the self-centered and selfish existence in the constant seeking of your own needs and pleasure is exhausting and leads to being eventually cut off from everyone and everything. It is a bottomless pit, and there is no satisfying it. Love does not exist in self-centeredness. Have a care, for many of you are on your spiritual journey and have confused self-centeredness and selfishness with self-realization and awakening. Looking for, perhaps, your peace, your pleasure, your needs, your enlightenment, your fulfillment, your gratification, your insight. And so long as everything is as this, there is that which is within you. That is without limit, and it seeks to express itself without limit. That is you. That is the One. That is God. That is the essence of the truth. And it seeks not to get. It longs to give, you see. And unless it gives, there is emptiness. I speak not of sacrifice. For sacrifice is not giving, it is sacrifice. Sacrifice is the giving of what you do not have. Giving is the giving of what you do have, and so you must find what it is you have to give. And when you know what you value, you are then duty-bound towards it. that you may give what you value. It is a powerful responsibility and a joyous one. It requires a commitment, devotion, and love. Do not forget the love, or you'll forget the value. Remember love, and you will find and be able to reestablish the value when you lose it. But forget the love, and you will forget the value, and you will forget the purpose, and you will forget the self, and you will become empty, and there will be pain, and there will be suffering. You do not come here for the work of enlightenment. The work of enlightenment does not require your having come here, for that work can be done anywhere, and so you are not here for that explicitly. The work of enlightenment, which you shall also do here, is not the thing for which you come, even though you will do it and it is important. You come here for a gift. And that gift lies in finding that nature that is without limit, that is the truth of who you are, that is found in love and what there is to give. Not what there is to get. You will get much. In some cases, limitlessly. And while that may be rewarding and at some times fulfilling, that is not why you come. But this bounty you shall also receive for those of you who need it or want it. But that is not why you come here. All have great bounty and must have great bounty if you can truly understand what bounty truly is. Bounty is not your gold, necessarily, nor is it the absence of gold to find other things. Bounty is that which makes you rich, and so do not become empty, and do not become desperate. Do not be without bounty. Do not be without riches. Be full. My name does not matter. In some way, I know you all. The message is for more than one. I love you. If there are questions you would ask of me, I will answer them for a time, and then another wishes to come. teaching begins outside of a teaching environment. Perhaps it is better that you would have been told you shall embrace a leadership, and it will be through your leadership that you shall teach, and then you will structure that leadership into a forum that is teaching. And this is as much as I can say at this time. You're welcome. Is there another?
Is only giving inviting touch. We need others to know the space we took up with the joy rather than self-sacrifice. Which I think in my life has been a
do not confuse pleasure with joy. For sometimes giving is distinctly difficult and joyous. It is not always pleasurable. It is fulfilling. It is enriching. It is expanding. But it is not always pleasurable. It is frequently pleasurable, but not always. Sacrifice can be understood in two ways. One way I have described it as the result of giving what you do not have to give, and therefore the feeling of abuse. Now that is a lower level of sacrifice, and it is painful and torturous, and it is rending to the soul. There is also another kind of sacrifice, and this sacrifice perhaps I would call love, and it is the giving not of what you have, but everything one has, holding nothing back, without reservation. It is not an equal sharing, is it? It is an absolute delivery of everything there is. This is also a sacrifice. And this comes from a wealth of understanding of one's limitlessness, or one's connectedness to the limitlessness. And this is a giving of everything and is sacrificial. I wouldn't recommend this unless you are certain of your union with the limitlessness. For even if you are certain of your union with it, after giving it, you will question your certainty. If you give it and you are uncertain from the start, it will destroy you. But if you know you are limitless or connected with it, then you will find everything in the giving. For me, this is not sacrifice. This is love. In some way, all love at some level requires that. All other things less than that might not be love. It may be some form of barter. Yet love can begin at whatsoever level one recognizes it to be, but it will always engender, ultimately, the giving of everything which you are able to give, sooner or later. Learning this is the highest of all possible lessons for this particular dimension. And it is learned in many contexts, sometimes personally, sometimes impersonally, sometimes globally, sometimes culturally, sometimes interpersonally. It exists in many contexts and paradigms. But ultimately, love, or anyone who gives from love, will give more than they intend to, sooner or later, until they give everything. Ultimately, without reservation and without fear. If this is your lesson, that is, if you are involved in learning this, and only you know, and only you can tell, and only you can find out, then the lesson isn't one of self-abuse or abusiveness. Of course, one will need to face the patterns which are the contexts which one finds oneself in before release into truth. But one can never let go of those things by attempting to deal with those things as the issue, but rather by understanding the higher spiritual issue as they are ready, as they are ready, and understanding that there may be a lesson at hand into recognizing the truth of being connected to the infinite consciously first. It is instantaneous. It does not unfold. It is instantaneous, and one must remember it. If it ever occurred for a moment, then it needs to be remembered. For the remembering of it calls it forth again. And you will need to call it forth again into arenas of involvement which will test every commitment that you value, for it will call you deeper into some and away from others. And no one shall understand the truth of it save those who have the eyes to see. And the world at large can never see these things. It is true that those that are within the lesson can see it incorrectly, but no one who is outside of the lesson, save those who have the eyes to see, which means those who know they are connected to the infinite, can be a guide for such a person involved in such a lesson. Let the words which I have said resonate within your being, for the answer does not exist in the words which have been spoken here, but an energetic, if you will, that has been created, that cannot be understood in this moment, but in future moments, as you have more contact with a moment much like this one. Let everything I have said go, for anything there is to hold is held within your heart and needs no clinging to any word which has been spoken here. Larry, your head reels with questions. Will you let one come forward?
It's off the subject a little bit.
Very well.
But I came here with the intent of asking this. And earlier I think it was touched on. Last time we were all together, I asked Merlin had come across and I've asked a question. And when the soul breaks with the body, it's a symbiotic type situation. I assume, I'm not really sure what I'm talking about. But there is this dominant force that we spend a lifetime working against, which is probably the wrong approach to begin with. But it is the ego. And I've yet to ever find or read an adequate description of that force that we constantly work against. What is the ego? What side, what is that force that constantly tries to limit, constantly tries to negate any progress we make? What is that?
Ego cannot be battled. If it is fought, you will lose. It is not a force. It is not even an it. It is a shadow. It is a shadow cast by the fact that you exist. And mistakenly have identified at times with the shadow that is cast than the truth of what you are. In the context which I described just now, it can be understood. But in daily life, it can only be observed. It cannot be fought. You cannot argue with it. You cannot fight against it. To do so is to lose any battle. For it doesn't require a battle. It doesn't require a resistance to it. There are things which do require your strength and your will, but the ego is not one of them. It requires much more than I can say, but there is another who will further address your question here, who will come after me and help it be more easily understood. Suffice for now to say this. Every raindrop is different. Every snowflake is unique. Every diamond is made more special by its errors than its perfection. A human being is like that. A human being is like that. human being is like that. A human being can attain only a perfection of an encompassing love and understanding, cannot express a perfection of being, because the perfection of being does not require an effort, and that which requires effort is not perfecting the being, since it is already perfect. Something does require perfecting, or requires effort rather, but it is not perfecting that requires effort. What does require effort, in which you experience struggle, is about another matter than the ego, and that is what the other will describe. The false fight with the self against another part of the self is purely because of the ignorance of love. With the knowledge of love, with the knowledge of love, one loves what they otherwise would hate. But one must have knowledge of love. Ultimately, simply said, all that you dislike about yourself, you must come to love. Greetings, friends. I am Merlin. Very happy to come. Very happy to have a little time with you. The struggle with the self. Well, it is really a struggle with what is aptly called the shadow self. The dark side. Oh, there is a dark side. Rest assured, there is a dark side. But the dark side is nothing to fear. However, you will fear it. It is nothing to fear, but you will fear it. You see. Understand, first of all, the nature of fear is that which is sourced in not knowing, ignorance. Anything which you do not know, you will tend to fear, you see. And so, the more you do not know, the more you can fear. And the more you seek knowledge, the less you shall fear. That is why, essentially, you must go into the core of everything you fear, because that's how you gain knowledge of it, through the experience of it, until you no longer fear it, you see. This struggle with the shadow self is a struggle to avoid what you fear, when, in fact, you must study what you fear. And that's where you need the will. That's where you need the effort, you see. The idea that you mentioned, which many people are involved with, is this idea of ego. Now, the reason why this became so popular is because one needs a terminology to describe these different matters, but all of these terminologies at some point in time fall short of the truth of the reality of what is going on. They only help set a context, a stage, a hologram, if you will, a faint imagery of a knowing that is to come, a knowing greater than the faint imagery that you've been given by words or any kind of understanding. So sooner or later you're going to have to give up everything you understand intellectually to embrace it on some other kind of level. Now that doesn't mean you have to throw away everything you've learned intellectually, it just means what you've grasped intellectually will not be able to contain what you have come to know adequately. And eventually, you'll find yourself saying, I don't know, I can't explain. However, you can't get away with saying, I don't know, I can't explain, very long, because before you know it, as soon as you say, I don't know, I can't explain, there will be someone there to say, but you must explain, and you can know. And they will force you to anchor what you have experienced as an essential reality into this plane as a conceptual idea or something which can be grasped, because that is why you're here, to translate the ineffable name of God, which is itself all things that shall manifest, into expression. If you have touched it, we'll invent a little phrase. No, I'll leave the phrase alone. Because it doesn't make sense. However, if you have touched it, you're going to have to express it. You see? That is just how it is. It is the frustration of every creator, every artist, every being which comes into contact with a frequency, energy, idea, expression, thought form, energetic of any kind. They will be compelled by their knowledge of it to express it. And you will read, and you will writhe, and you will exert every effort until you can give birth to it, you see. Now there is nothing wrong with that. That is why you're here. If that is happening, then you're on the right track, you see. That is why you have been born. That is your unique talent, that is your unique gift, and you will have to give up. So, if you give up this ego, let us explain what the shadow is, giving up the darkness. Now, there is nothing wrong with your identity. Another way of saying what the ego is. That your ego, your identity, that which you function with in the world, is a reference, is your reference point. All of your belief structure and all of your feelings and everything based upon everything you have learned and related to this point, which has been reflected back to you until you have formed a conception and a notion of who you are and why you're here. Emphasis on the words conception and notion. Because the conception and the notion of who you are and why you're here is not the truth, necessarily. It is just your current understanding, your current conception, your current notion. Now, the animal part of your being, and we're all animals temporarily, including me, because I have adopted this animal form temporarily. I'll just be an animal a little more quickly than you. Now, this animal form has a love, has a passion, has a need for its survival, you see. So the more that your ego structure, that which you have a notion that you are, that which you have a conception about yourself in relation to the world, has a need, love, passion for its own survival. So that if that notion functions effectively in the world, you're going to like yourself. You're going to think, I'm pretty good at this. For I have created a successful survival for my organism. And my organism functions well amidst the other organisms, and sometimes so effectively that these other organisms have arranged themselves in their lives rather supportively of me in such a way that I have to not struggle as much as otherwise I might have to. And therefore I am a success. I. But what exactly is that I? Now, you cannot make that I a bad thing. That is what Yeshua said. I wasn't supposed to say that. Well, that is what Yeshua was trying to say. You can't fight the ego. You cannot fight. Why would you ever fight with it? After it performed so well. Or what if it didn't perform so well? What if it performed poorly? And you fought with it for performing poorly. Well, all you're going to do is defeat yourself either way. If you fight with what was successful, all you fight with what wasn't successful, you're still in a fight, you see. So you have to give up the fight, you see. Now, if you are to expand beyond any context of that which you currently are, you must find a way to become inclusive of that which you are now, not exclusive of it. That's love, you see. You must become embracing rather than rejecting. Now, this is sometimes more difficult when what you are has been in some way successful than when it had been successful, in how you judge it as unsuccessful. Because you can embrace the way you have been that is less successful sooner or later as having learned something from it. But how do you go beyond that which works? How do you go beyond that which has worked for you? How do you transcend that? And why would you, you see? So the tendency is to become identified with that statically, to keep that at its stasis, to become, to conventionalize it, to secure it, to establish it, you see. That is what the organism, the animal organism, wants to do, establish and protect its territory if it has a thriving territory. There's a little problem with that. And the problem is, how exactly do you protect your terrain? How? How exactly do you protect your terrain? Well, some of you may see this as problematic, others of you may not see this as problematic. But essentially, in order to protect your terrain, you might then be perceiving that there is an adversary threatening your terrain. Otherwise, what is there to protect? I mean, if there is no adversary, then why do you need to protect? You only need to protect if there's an adversary of some kind, a threat of some kind. So what are you going to do if you want to protect your terrain? Look for the problems. Look for the adversary. If you look for the adversary, you're going to find an adversary. And you're going to step on the toes of your fellows, and they are going to retaliate. And you are going to be in a war. And that war creates a very competitive environment, you see. It is inevitable that you will be in a competitive environment so long as you are invested in the protection, the ultimate protection of your psychic and otherwise your other territory. Now this does not mean you're not entitled to security, psychic and otherwise. Because, I should put it differently, that you should have no security. That is not what I'm saying. But entitlement is another matter. You see, you must claim. No one is entitled to anything, you see. You're not entitled, you claim. You see, a right, a truth, is claimed by the claimant as the right and the truth. You see, my acknowledgement of the truth has little to do with your pronouncement of the truth. You see, you can pronounce, you can state, you can demand that I embrace the truth of my own existence or any other kind of a truth that you demand I claim. You might even, to a certain extent, be able to force me, if you push your intent and have the power to do it on me sufficiently, that I am in harmony with your law or truth. You can do that to a certain extent. But what does that have to do with my embracing any truth? You see, if there is a truth, I must claim it and thereby be the recipient of its consequence. You see, I must claim it. I must establish it. Now, if I claim my truth, I am claiming an energy form, I am claiming an idea. That idea has a consequence, you see. Whatever it is for everything, has every action, every thought has a reaction. So I must claim such a truth as its consequence is supportive, nurturing, expansive, and rewarding. So I must be selective about what territories I seek to establish and claim as valid and valuable. Because I do not want to claim any territory which I have to defend. I just don't want it. I've claimed enough territories in my existences to know that there is a price for every single thing I claim, and I have decided that I want to pay my prices effectively. I do not want to waste time claiming territory which I have to defend. I want to claim the territory that is well beyond a defense, you see. So what kind of territory is that? That is a kind of territory that has less to do with the world beyond than the world here, you see. Here, I have found something quite successful. I had claimed territory which is my share. Very simple. Not your share, you see. Now, what is my share? Well, I find out what is my share and what isn't very easily. Can you? Whatever you claim will reveal its price. You can claim whatever you can afford. You cannot claim what you cannot afford. Simple as that. There are many kinds of costs. Are you willing to pay those costs? Do you have it within you to afford those costs? Claim what you can afford. As a being, as a member of the spiritual community, as a member of the earth community, because you live in contexts, you are not alone. You live in contexts, plural of the word context, in context. You do not live alone. It helps to make everything which you claim useful. It helps to make everything that you claim useful. What you cannot claim, what you claim that isn't useful, will in the vernacular bite you in the arse. It is like all kinds of claims, whether they are psychic or material, emotional or mental, have a price. And they must flow, you see. All things that are claimed function on flow. Claim it and overstore it and it will stagnate. Money, value, all kinds of things that are important, which sit still, stagnate. Money is like that, it's like a big water. You collect it, without it having any use, it will stagnate, grow nasty, create nastiness, and you will become involved in the nastiness. Put it to use. Put it to use for yourself and others, your families, your communities, things like that. Effectively, efficiently, you'll find ways to do that. The same is true with any space that you claim psychically. Or on any other level, utilize what you claim, utilize what you have been given. No hurry to do it. Instead, have an orientation, we would suggest, of thinking, how can this be useful? To what end might this be useful? Because you are a being which loves flow. At the higher level, that's what you are. The part of you which seeks to, the animal part which wants to be secure in your person, to have a roof over your head, to have food in your mouth, to have love in your heart, to have relations which are nurturing. These are the basic fundamental needs. They are rather easily acquired. Oh, I know some of you will argue with me, but it's not difficult to acquire those things in a certain measure. What is difficult is trying to get out of them what they're not meant to give. That is very difficult. It is impossible. But that never stopped a compulsive human being. Trying to get something out of what it doesn't have to offer. You will never get security out of money. You will get security out of a feeling of psychic empowerment. That's where you get security from. You do not get it from money. The more you try to get security, for example, from money, the more insecure you will become, because money, for example, is based on a very competitive principle. And everybody will be vying for the dollars which you possess. And to get a sense of security from money is extraordinarily difficult. Now, you can get lots of things with money, but not security. And if you have security, it's because you have a sense of psychic safety within your being. And you have learned, if you have money and you are secure, then you have learned, money comes and money goes. Rest assured. If you haven't learned that and you have money, you are not secure. And you better go right on collecting it to find the lesson. Ultimately, you will never get security that way. And it's like that with every other thing. So to acquire the basic fundamental needs is relatively easy. A little food, a little housing, a little love, a little good relation is very easy to achieve. But try to get what those things do not have to offer. Oh, and you can spend a lifetime and never achieve it. Never achieve it. Well, having said that, it is very much like Yeshua was saying. The first step is everything that you do not like about yourself, embrace it. Embrace it. I'm too fat. Well, I'm just fat. Embrace it. Is fat a reason not to like yourself? I know that such things are not based on reason. It's an emotional response, you see, that people have. However, notwithstanding that might be an emotional response, what is a good reason not to love oneself? What is a good reason not to love oneself? Well, if there is no good reason not to love oneself, then isn't it important to embrace oneself with love as you are now? That doesn't mean you cannot change. It is just that sometimes what you may have been taught somewhere along the way is that if you like the way you are, you'll never do anything about it. You'll never do anything about change. You'll never do anything about growth. That somehow some people get the idea, if they don't hate where they are, or they cannot do anything about where they are until they reject it. Do you know that some of the highest principle that exists, principle, the most popular principle in this world, is to become intolerant of your condition and then you will change it. Do you know that's a very functioning principle in this world? And do you know that's a very strong ideal in the psychic paradigm of human beings at this time? And that is why it's so easy for each of you to adopt it. It's so available. Watch your television, your commercials, interact with each other. Watch how frequently people become angry before they do something that they can create a change within. Watch how people, or yourselves, will let yourself grow more and more frustrated with a circumstance until the boiling point, and then you do something about it. You see, until you become absolutely intolerant, why can't you simply, for example, see that something needs a change and take action before you grow unhappy? No. That would be much too difficult. Well, the ego is that shadow. It is that part. Someone wounded it. That's why it is. I have a wound. One never knows. One day I had a mustache, next day I didn't. One day I had a little goatee, next day I didn't. One time I had a wound, and the next day I don't. One never knows. I hope I didn't make the town bleed. That is wound. Well, up against, because you do find yourself up against something every now and then, don't you? I will not try to convince you that it isn't a force. My brother can very easily say things like, there's no force you're fighting, and leave. Because he doesn't come here that often and have to argue. I don't have to argue, I just love to argue. But and since I love to argue, I have to argue. So I will argue that there is something you come up against, you see. Well, what you call it, a force or not, may not be that important. But in order to help understand, let's discuss another of my favorite subjects about that will help you understand the nature of what you are up against and how it might not be a force that you're up against and therefore doesn't require resistance to go through it. Now, let us take the subject of gravity, for example, do you have an understanding of what gravity is? Do you know what it is? Or some of you studied such things, or have made an investigation into it at all? On any level, scientifically, theosophically, philosophically, spiritually. I'm just, Chris, I won't ask you to articulate your understanding. I'm just wondering if anyone has some sort of understanding about it, whatever it might be. Well, all right, there's a few meek nods. Well, one thing that you'll notice that if you try to jump, you will not get very far. and it may seem like something is forcing you back down. And what seems to be forcing you back down is something that you have accepted the definition of, which is called gravity. That if you are to get very far, you must, if in terms of resisting or defying or achieving, what do you call it? Height? Altitude. Yes, that you must somehow create sufficient force to react against it. And at a certain level, it appears to be true. The theory from a particular dimension, namely this one, appears to be very true. But it's only true to a certain extent and so far as that truth goes. And that truth does not go very far. And because it doesn't go very far, you can't go very far on the principle of defiance against gravity. There are other principles higher than that with which a certain understanding will allow you to go a great deal further, not only achieve altitude, but achieve a spatial and time distortion that will allow you to go much further without ever having to resist or defy gravity. The appearance of what seems to be gravity is an illusion that is visible only from this plane, only from the earth, the plane of the earth, where there seems to be three dimensions when in fact there aren't. There are all manner of dimensions which are invisible from this point of view, but which are deducible mathematically and by a number of other means. Now, a simple understanding, and then we can get back to the ego because they're very interrelated. Simple understanding would be, if we were to think of this world, you have all heard that, for example, this world exists of more than three dimensions. You have heard that. But all you can really involve yourself with every day are three of them. The other dimensions, as soon as you go beyond three, it seems one finds himself in very insubstantial and difficult territory, is it not? So you must arrange your life in such a way as your life is mostly involved with three dimensions. Now, with all of your life involved with three dimensions and all of your investment of time and energy in three dimensions, what time have you left for any other study of other dimensions? Nevertheless, let us presume there is a fourth, for the sake of argument, and a fifth and a sixth, but let us just presume there is a fourth dimension, and in order to understand the nature of a fourth dimension, you must use your imagination, or you can use your imagination pretending that we are, for example, two-dimensional beings. Let us just say all that existed were, let us pretend that all there is, let us pretend this plane of glass is the reality. That is the universe, that plane of glass. And that, and I don't mean even the depth of the glass, just that top little plane of glass. And it's two-dimensional on the top plane. It is this way and that way. But we obviously exist, even though that we will call the universe. So, we as three-dimensional beings want to reveal something to the universe of two-dimensional entities there. So we go over there. Means there are three dimensions. In fact, we are here. Let us go and prove it to you by placing our hand on your universe. And you can see that we are the something in your universe other than you. Well, they look up in their sky, these two-dimensional beings, and they cannot see us. All they can see is the bottom of this palm, which looks like not us, but five fingers. And not even fingers, because they can only see something, five little extensions and a thing in the middle. They cannot see any depth, you see. So how does three-dimensional reality impose itself on two-dimensional awareness, you see? So what if there's a fourth dimension, but likewise you cannot see it? What if the fourth dimension was a space-time distortion? What if that were the truth of things? What if, let's put it a different way, what if time were a place in space, not a point in your theoretical yesterday, such as that you could go to yesterday by traveling in a particular manner that would take you to a different place where that time existed? What if time were another dimension? And it is, you see. But the moment a three-dimensional being tries to function in a time reality, there are issues which that being comes up against, which resist its progress into a fourth dimension. You cannot take your three-dimensional form into a fourth-dimensional reality without certain understanding that enables it. However, your consciousness can journey outside of time. It is a proof that your consciousness exists, does it not? So where? Where? You know you have a thought. You know you have a consciousness. You know it exists. What place will you call its existence? It does not serve simply to call it your imagination if you're trying to find out where it is. You cannot accurately say the imagination is nowhere, because it exists, and if it exists, it's somewhere. So where is it? You see? What if there is a certain level of your physical reality that can be measured, that is so subtle that only your consciousness can function in that level of physical reality, that your body can function there? Well, your physicists have found such a subtle level, have begun to find that level where your thought moves reality, and they're having an extraordinarily difficult time, some physicists, trying to find an absolute truth, a truth of all things, because every scientist, every theoretician who attempts to establish a proof for a theory finds that they can prove their theory, no matter what point of view they take, and that nothing stays static, that their thought affects the outcome of the reality of their experiment, and they're having the damnedest time getting reality to be objective. Very interesting. Now, it is objective. They just haven't found on what level it's objective. They're still finding a reality that is movable. So, the ego, this is what we started having this discussion about, does not term which one uses to identify a function, you see. And it is an inaccurate identifier, but it serves to use, it serves the reality that you're functioning in. But at the level that it does not serve the functioning that you're in, is to discuss it as a thing to fight against. Much the same as saying that if you want to travel through time, you cannot travel the same way you locomote through space. That traveling through space through locomotion techniques will not get you to a different place in time. Battling the ego, fighting against the force of the ego, is not the way to work with it. Using your will in physical existence towards certain things is very effective. Using the will against the ego is like trying to travel through time by walking. You see, you will not succeed. The ego will win. You cannot battle the ego with will. Do you understand? You cannot do it by fighting it. In fact, there's a whole different level at work when it comes to the ego. The first thing you have to understand about it is it doesn't exist. What exists is inculcated beliefs which produce habit patterns which you have become identified with as self. And when you are trying to affect change, those inculcated beliefs and habit patterns are what you meet with, and all of their consequences are also what you meet with in your three-dimensional life. So you get an idea, for example, I need change, outwardly, inwardly, whatever level it is. So this idea, being inspired, you attempt to set in motion, and you are thoroughly sincere in your effort to effect a change. Lo and behold, something else comes in. Let us take an example. Is it the ego that Mitar is up against, for example, we'll have to forgive us Mitar, when he's trying to leave out sugar and eats ice cream bars? Now, so he may try to effect all of these changes so that his body does not crave sugar. And then amidst not craving sugar, he gets an idea. I'm going to have an ice cream bar. Why did he do that? Is it important not to eat those ice cream bars? Is he to fight eating those ice cream bars? Has he not found the proper technology by which he can transcend the ice cream bar? How does one do this? So, Matar thinks, damn it, I can't get beyond ice cream. What kind of a human being am I that cannot get beyond ice cream, you see? Immediately, he forgets all other progress in every other area, including the areas that he has arrived at in terms of his awakenings along the way, as he tried to transcend the ice cream bar. And immediately, they are no longer valued. Just because he is in a battle with trying to not eat ice cream, he has ceased to value himself. He thinks, because he has identified his progress with whether or not he eats ice cream. Now that is an error. Who he is has nothing to do with ice cream, or not eating ice cream, or eating ice cream. How does it ever get to the point? Well, he based himself upon what he does. How did it ever get to that point? Now, what is supposed to occur, and will sooner or later, is it doesn't matter. Now, it doesn't matter does not mean, oh, it doesn't matter, so I can eat all the ice cream that I have to or want to, because that means that it does matter, you see. What is the realization that it doesn't matter? What is that about? And what is it that doesn't matter? What is it that doesn't matter? When everything doesn't matter, he shall understand. When item by item the awakening occurs, it doesn't matter. That is realization. You see? Now you can pretend realization by going around saying it doesn't matter. That is not realization. You can pretend realization by attempting to make things which do matter not. The ego is what will cause that, this non-existent ego. The ego is your best assessment as to your integrated self. I'm sorry for all the jargon. It isn't intended, but I must say it this way. You have identified who and what you are the best you can, and you must surrender that identification sooner or later. Now, there are different levels of how deeply you have assessed yourself. You have assessed yourself at a very high level. There's a spectrum. And you have also assessed yourself at the lowest level. Whatever that level is, you have a spectrum, a range of that which you identify as you. And you tend to function within that range of identifiers. That is not who you are. You see, you are not this range. Let us call this which you have identified with in this range, whatever this is, as your ego. Now, since you are not that, that's just what you've identified with, there's nothing to fight. Because you're not that in the first place. There's nothing to fight. But what you come up against somehow ice cream, and whether or not Matar eats it, has been reduced into a battle with his higher self. That battle doesn't matter. Because it is totally an error. It just doesn't matter. You see. Now it might matter whether Matar eats ice cream or not, but it has nothing to do with who he is. You see. That doesn't matter. Why does he think it has something to do with who he is? The reason why he thinks it has something to do with who he is because there is a part of him that is approaching his embrace of himself and his enlightenment as though it were a will-based struggle towards the light. When he can love himself, whether or not at least that whether or not he has ice cream, he will find it doesn't matter. You see? And that is realization. It is as simple as that. Now, whether he wants to be fat or not, have high blood pressure or not, that those are other issues. But somehow, people like to tie in one thing with the other. If I have high blood pressure, if I don't have these kinds of masteries, how can I be a high being? That is the ego. The ego wants to be perfect. That is a demon. Beware of the perfection demon. It leads you to one place. Neurosis. Isolation, self-hatred, confusion, abuse, and tyranny. No part of you. No, the part of you which wants, which is afraid that you will not survive. And so you fight either against society, your culture, your religion, God, or anything you perceive to be larger than you because it's a threat, you're afraid. You see, understand this, as a human being there is a survival instinct whose frequencies are very similar to that of fear. In other words, when your survival is threatened, you have a measure of fear, or what you might label fear. That response is to cause you to do what you need to do to survive. Because you are aware of this response related to your survival, every animal has it, you see. You're an animal. Also, you're an animal. Now, as an intelligent animal, your intelligence wants to address a perceived problem. I don't like having my sense of survival threatened. What can I do to insulate myself against threat? You see? Along the way, because you do not like this feeling of feeling threatened, and it is an instinct to survive, somehow you eventually equate security with happiness. And it isn't so. You see, your safety against, now this is a high level of understanding too, because at the lower level of the understanding you never equate your security with happiness. You just think that you're never secure and you get as much of it as you can. You see, who cares whether it has anything to do with happiness? I got to survive, you see. So, but at a higher level, you think, if I'm secure, I can also be safe, and safe is happy. You see, so That is an error. That is like saying, if I don't eat ice cream, I will have mastery. That is equally as silly. Yes, you must be safe, and you must also be conscious and aware. You must separate those issues. You see, that is another level of understanding. When those issues get separated, you've shifted into a higher level. You must eventually come to see that what is going on is instinct, and you must recognize your instincts and how to address them, and you must recognize your higher needs and how to address those. That is spiritual awakening. Now, I say it as though it is one thing, but there are many awakenings which lead to the level shift. For example, look at all you may have had to go through, and I'm presuming you all have been through it, not only because I am psychically aware of it that you have, but you're old enough to have gone through it. Look at how all of you have learned that having a partner doesn't make you feel secure. What does it do for you? It may do lots of things, but the moment you had your partner, you didn't become secure. And if you did, I'm certain at some point you had that violation, you had that sense of security violated, which you probably didn't take too well. And I'm certain there may have been a point where it caused the rising of your animal, and you became very angry, and you did whatever an angry animal has to do to either protect its territory or end the threat. You see. Now, that... So then, did you decide that a relationship is somehow unnecessary? Some of you may have tried once to do that, but you're still animals. And that won't work either. So what's the purpose of a relationship? Well, all right, we won't go into that. I'm trying to make a point about something else. That you've had to separate the issues, you see. If, and you had an awakening, at best, some point in time, you may not yet know what a relationship is for, but you know that it won't necessarily make you feel secure. You know you might feel sometimes a little better, but you might also have found sometimes you feel a little worse. But sooner or later, you might just come down to, I want one. I want happy or fulfilling relationships. And of course, I want an intimate person to be fulfilling in relationship too. Do you know that's a higher level of awakening? You're stopped demanding that a relationship fulfill your deepest needs for security, or your animal, or you have come to terms with that while your basic instinctual demands may be addressed, you still have other business, which comes into your relationship and as well as it does another life. So these are the types of awakenings that you have. You must understand what is instinct and how to address it. And you must understand what your higher needs are and how to address it, and stop confusing the two. So that is when the fight begins to stop. To let go of trying to make one thing address the other thing, to make the lower thing address the other thing, is a great difficulty which one might experience as a battle. In other words, you may have had an awakening somewhere along the line that, let us say, a love relationship will not solve all your problems. It just may seem to solve some big ones. And you may have even gone further and discovered that a love relationship might invite certain new problems you never expected to face. You see, and so you might have even gotten that far. And you might have even gotten further to find it evolving. However, at a certain point in time, you might have had the awakening that it will not solve all of your problems. And you've accepted that. Then you have a relationship. And then you secretly wanted to solve the problems that you learned earlier it wouldn't ever solve anyway. So you may try to start making it. Little manipulations here and there. Or you may try to get it to do that. And then you're in a fight, you see. And then your life is a mess. It's a struggle, you see. And who can convince such a person amidst a struggle that it isn't one? Who can convince a person amidst such an experience all they have to do is let go? Certainly, amidst your greatest struggles, some do-gooder was a voice of the Spirit who came to you and said, just let go. What you have to do is let go, I'm certain. The voice of Spirit came through the person you least likely wanted to hear it from. And you didn't understand. You didn't accept it. But when you did let go, when you suffered enough, you did eventually let go. You stopped resisting the notion and you let go. You stopped fighting. You stopped fighting. I will tell you a secret. You will have to stop fighting everyone and everything at some point in time. Even yourself. No more fight. So how do you do it? You make a beginning. You stop fighting with the things you can stop fighting with. Because there are some things you can't stop fighting with. Not yet. Start where you can. Let go of what isn't important. I think there's a book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. Very wise whoever wrote that book. It doesn't mean I think there's a subtitle to it, and it's all small stuff. That's what you'll eventually come to find. That is an awakened understanding, you see. It doesn't mean you should immediately stop fighting everything, because you may have positioned yourself by the strength of your will further than where you would otherwise be. And you stop creating that, things may collapse, and you may not like that collapse, and you may have a breakdown that you don't like, you see. So that is sometimes why enlightened teachers tell students, go away, because your battle will end and your world will fall apart. Because you're struggling to hold your world together, and if you stop the struggle, your world's going to fall apart, and you're not ready. So, I wouldn't recommend you stop all your battles immediately. Because some of them are holding your will together in a way that's very meaningful to you. But what I would suggest, if you're battling the shadow more often than you like, shadow boxing, well, stop boxing the shadows, which you can stop boxing. And you'll find it is infectious. Now, sooner or later, the animal part of you, which is an instinctual fighter, will feel very threatened by stopping fighting. But by the same token, an awakened power will start streaming through you because you have let go of a few battles. And you will find that your life begins to orient itself differently in more and more instances, such that you find yourself needing to battle less often. Though, as long as you're in this world, there will always be a good fight to fight somewhere along the line for you, because your culture hasn't gone far enough where it has collectively put to rest its competitive society, in which which is very embattled, you see. However, you can be positioned successfully such that you choose which battles are effective for you to fight. And you are properly equipped with the knowledge and the team to enter into it intelligently, you see. And even if you do this, you're still going to have a few scraps along the way, even the most well-intentioned that you are. So what we are saying all told here is simply this, and then I shall go. The key is not to try to stop fighting with the ego. The key is to embrace your life as it is. To embrace yourself as you are right now, which is why love is the answer. It's all very simplistic. The greatest truth is simple. All of your complicated teachings, metaphysics, spiritual studies are going to lead to big, fat statements of simplicity. I promise you that. I promise you that. If you don't like where you are, love it. If you don't like who you are, love it. You don't have to like it. Do you know what I mean by love it? Accept it. You don't have to like it. Accept it. How do you accept it? You become tolerant that it exists. Think about it. Why be the only reason you are being intolerant of it is because it seems like if you grow in that intolerance, you'll eventually do something about it. Your intolerance gives you the impression you're doing something about it, and it's a lie. The anger makes you feel you're doing something about it, and you're not. You are doing something about it that has nothing to do with your frustration. You're thinking about it. You're dwelling it. You're observing it. You're seeking insight, and that takes time. So eventually you must accept, you must be tolerant that it exists sufficiently until the awakening occurs, and it's never very long. The more tolerant, the more quickly you become tolerant of it, the faster you will have the awakening. The more that you fight with it, the more likely it is you'll find a false answer. And some of these false answers can take a long time to find out they're false. For example, let us say, for example, that you're intolerant of your financial condition. It makes you hate everything. It makes you hate yourself. You just can't stand it. Let's take it to an extreme. You hate people who are wealthy. You resent it from them. You don't even know you resent them. You think they're evil because they did something to get wealthy that must have hurt someone somewhere along the line. And you rail against them. You envision they have all manner of personalities. They have a culture unto themselves that is directly attuned against you, who are ignorant, stupid, and low. And therefore you will fight against them. And after a time you say, I know the way, I'll get rich and I'll show them. And then you think, oh, I know that's a low idea. I won't get rich to show them, because I really know something's wrong with me if I'm not rich. So I'll make myself rich, because then something will be right with me if I'm rich. And then, in order to get rich, I will do these things that I really hate doing, but it will make me rich anyway. If I am so successful as to find out how to do that, or so manipulative, or so clever, that I can do it, and then I'll do this, and I go up on the path, and I'll take a seminar in how to get rich. In fact, I'll join a religion that tells me it's spiritual to be rich. And then I will get rich and support it from every possible way, and then I can like my life and who I am. And I will spend decades, if necessary, doing this. Sometimes it takes a long time to discover error. Now, what if that person was sad because they would like to have more than they do, and they simply accept it? I'm unhappy like this. Simple. Not that they're bad, they're unhappy. What is wrong with them? Frustrated, you see. The world is not against them. God isn't squishing them down. Powers are not making them go through a lesson. They're upset. They must face that. Accept that. Because something awakens when a being does that. A gentleness. A vision begins to appear that is the way out into the next level. And that usually is not an error. Usually, at that point, a human being who observes the way they feel and what is going on within them, not the world, but within themselves, begins to have a realization about themselves. And in that realization, a little more of who they are and what they're really for shifts into place. And that is power. Because that realization is enabling. It makes a person do what they must do, not from will, but because they can't do it any other way. It makes a person do what they must do, even if they don't want to do it. It is not a matter of will. They can't stand being out of alignment with what has awakened within them. They are uncomfortable because they are out of alignment with what is within them. And the power has flowed into them to do what puts them into alignment, even if they don't like it. You see? Now, when a soul does that, one might also think, I wish this were easier, because it's hard. Here's the thing about power. When I say the power flows into you to do that, you may equate power at the level of will. And I am not speaking of power at the level of will. You may, because of that equation, that equating, you may think, ah, when he means power, that means I will immediately face my circumstances with courage and aplomb, and I'll go into this, and I will just won't feel like anything. No, it's not necessarily power at the level that I'm thinking it. Power at the level that I'm thinking of, and that I'm trying to express, is like the difference between locomotion and bending the time-space stream. You can locomote through the exercise of muscular energy through space, through three-dimensional space, but you cannot locomote by the exercise of muscular energy through the mind. You see, it's another shift. The energy that I am speaking about is this level of energy that you are uncomfortable with. It comes into you and makes you uncomfortable. I can't go another day in this circumstance. I've got to make a change. It's not you, it's me. I don't know what it is. I've got... You say, it's coming out of you. You don't even know how to let it into you completely. You're fighting with it, but you're letting it through. That's good. And when it comes out of you, the other souls around say, oh, poor soul, oh, no, no, no. Then that starts coming out of them, you see, who are around you, who are out of it. And they start to help you. You see, you're not in a fight anymore. Soon you'll develop a love for that kind of energy. And it starts to work in your plane more and more freely, with less and less resistance. And then it leads you into greater challenges. But at the levels that you're functioning in, those grow easier. But it leads you into new challenges at higher levels, letting in more energy, which you're equally uncomfortable with, but facing greater challenges. And this is how you grow. Until you are completely comfortable with the power that flows through you as you. In a vast number of circumstances in life, and you're an awakened, realized, powerful being, which no longer fights with itself or the universe, because it is on another plane. The fighting is not necessary. You're not trying to jump and resist gravity to attain altitude. You stop resisting gravity and you use consciousness to go as far as you want. You see? You have given up using the wrong tools to get where you're trying to go. And you exercise correct ones, you see. Does this make sense? The right tool is love. In every instance. And it is not always easy to love, but it's still the right tool. And you may not love correctly, it's still the right tool. And you may make mistakes and think you used the wrong tool, but it's still the right tool. Love is magic. It is expansive. It is potent. It is corrective. It is edifying. It is empowering. It is a teacher. And it confronts your fear at every level. And it teaches your being and enriches it. It changes your circumstances and invites new ones. It tests your reality and expands upon it. It's correct at every level. And it is not always easily embraceable. Sometimes it is uncomfortably embraced. But embrace it nonetheless. And every other element of teaching, metaphysics, technology, and understanding, you will be guided to by love as a supreme guide. And wherever you go, where love is the emanation, it is always right, even if it seems to be wrong. Doesn't say meaning of known things by it. That is all the discussion I have in my being for today. If there are any questions which you wish to say, ask, please ask. I shall happily answer them, and then you may be on your way, loving beings.
Well,
yes.
Can you address the I that is looking at the consciousness? Or the I that knows our consciousness.
Great deal of eyes. I'll have to drink all of this water to answer that question. Water, the elixir of life. Water, the primary substance of which these physiologies are dependent and are made. Water, the most powerful healer in all the planet. When sufficient amount is drunk, disease is impossible and always short-staying. Until it's time to die, then nothing stops that. Water, with it, I have the capacity to speak an infinite length of time. Now, the eye which observes, first of all, something can observe, but that isn't you either. It is just a place of positioning that by positioning yourself there, you can see that something else exists other than the paradigm that you were one with. A And sometimes observing your thoughts, observing your feelings, creates a separation from them such that you can know that something else exists. It's not an intellectual process, it's an energetic process. The value is not in being able to separate yourself. That is an exercise. That is a technique. It's like saying the value of taking a wrench and turning the bolt is in the fact that the bolt turns. Not entirely true. The value in turning the bolt with the wrench is to either get the bolt off or to tighten the bolt on. It is not in the moving of the bolt in and of itself with a wrench. The technique of observation does not reveal who you are, nor does it make you a higher being by being able to separate yourself. In some instances, it has the capacity to create as much harm as it does good, just as tightening a bolt too tight can snap the bolt, or snap your wrist, or snap the wrench, and ruin the entire device, or taking the bolt off inappropriately can create many more problems than having left it on, even if it was in a too tight of a condition. So the observation is a technique. The value is in what occurs when a being is open to the idea that there is something more. Now, when one observes themselves, presumably you mean in a pattern. Presumably you mean when you recognize yourself in a pattern. Yes. And then you observe yourself in it. Now, what that does is allow you a moment of an expansive nature, in which time you are vulnerable to the rays of energy that are your essential self. Sooner or later, you will reclaim some sense of identity, but when you do, you'll be expanded. And you'll have a different perspective, a different notion, a different sense of who you are. Some people think that the whole idea is to always be the observer. That is a dangerous thing. Because you are not the observer. You are just not the thing you're identified with. You're neither one, you see. The device of observation is a device to produce a different state of being, a jog in consciousness, so that something more can be revealed, and it always is. Then you have a certain responsibility to act upon the revelation, and in that way anchor it and incorporate it somehow into your life in the three dimensions. Does that make any sense to you? Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
If your underlying question is, really, what is that which we really are, whether it is the I or something beyond, then what in all heaven's name is it? Well, that's what you have a life for. See, that is the question, isn't it? That is the question to be asking. because that is the revelation that must come. All that I can tell you is you are not what you think you are. You are something much, much more. You are shining like a star. And that is a gift to experience. And as you experience it, as it is expressed into whatever dimension that you live in, whatever form that you wish to express it, you become a conscious and beautiful entity. So the what you are is a vital presence. It is an indescribable and uncontainable effervescence from the source. But those are empty words. That must fill your existence to the largest capacity you are able to allow. And in so doing, that's when you understand. And it feels like love. See? So all of that incomprehensible description can be known in one moment of anything that feels like love to you. At least that's the beginning. See? If you have known the expansiveness of love, if you have felt empowered in your being, if you have felt awakened, that's you. That is you. Now, what does that have to do with this world? Hopefully, more and more. But you must let it get here, you see. That's the thing. Waste little time in the why it isn't the way it should be, except if you're trying to figure out how you can get it to be more the way it ought to be. You see, that's the only reason to worry about the why. And more about attempting to get more of that light which fills your being right now into this world. My other brother, the Buddha, I have lots of brothers and sisters, says it's all about doing good and less evil. He didn't say no evil. Less. More good, sin less. Do you know sin means to miss the mark? It's come to mean something else. It's a pejorative now that means you're bad. But to sin means to miss the mark. And just about everybody misses the mark a lot of the time. You see? But the purpose is to aim at the mark, and you're very likely going to get a great deal closer to it than if you never took aim. And you must accept the fact that you are going to miss the mark even if you aim at it. And that's all right. You see? So that means take it easy on yourselves. Don't judge yourselves too harshly. Just keep aiming at the mark. You can always, once you get close enough to the mark, you can always go right up to the thing, pull it up and put it in right closer. You see? But if you never take aim, you'll be turning all around, walking backwards and getting that out. You won't find where the target is. You can always aim at the target, walk up close and just to get right in. Life is like that. You see, you have to accept some of the rules, some of the time, and only excess enough, then fudge. You see, it's a little bit like that, because there are no rules except a certain respect for yourself and others. Blessings are with you, one and all. Thank you for your kind time and attention. Goodbye for now.